I'm grateful that that you came today. And what I want to do is share with you some thoughts and ideas about pastoral pornography and some of the statistics and some of the solutions and things that you can do, or I can do. And then I want to save some time for us to have a conversation, you know, to answer questions and to get some input from you. I want to couch this conversation, though, in a larger context, and that is that to be honest with you, we here in the seminary don't have a good reputation on this campus when it comes to sexuality. I hear way too often about seminary students who are having sex with undergrad students in the dorms or wherever. I hear too often about seminary students who are having sex with each other. I hear too often about female students here being approached in sexually inappropriate ways by male students. And I don't know about you, but I don't think that represents the Lord really, really well. And I want to do something about it. I want to do something about it because I have a burden that because of the call God has on our lives, that in every aspect of our life, we want to glorify God. This is a particular area of challenge for Christian men and for pastors in particular. And we're going to try to unpack why that's so. But I also want you to know that we're working on developing mechanisms here in the seminary to deal with this whole issue of sexuality better. And I'm hoping that once we're ready to roll them off, you know, the line and share them with you, that you'll really support them, because this is something that really needs a corporate view, not just an individual view. Would you agree? So let's begin looking at the problem of pastoral pornography. Let's take a look at the scope of the problem. How big is it? And so, what does this say? 40% of clergy struggle with pornography? I mean, the good news is that 60% don't. But 40%, two-fifths of us, it's a large number. It's both males and females who are clergy. This survey, by the way, was done across denominations, and Adventists were included in it. So it's not without us. It's not other people and not us. No, it was us too. Okay? And 20% of the calls on pastoral helplines from Focus on the Family were related to pornography. This is from pastors. 33% of clergy have visited sexually explicit websites. 53% of these visits occurred several times, not just once. And 30% of pastors looked in this survey, 30% looked at pornography in the last 30 days. So what do you think about that? It's not just a problem from historically, you know, in this survey, it was a present problem for way too many. 28% of spouses know about the problem. In surveys of pastors, 37% say that it is a problem for them currently. But this is important. 30% of clergy haven't talked to anybody about it. There's no safe place, they perceive, you know, for them to talk about it. 69% have prayed about it. Well, that's a good start. But only 4% have gotten any kind of professional help. You know, that's not a good encouraging statistic. And 10% of the calls on pastoral helpline are from women clergy who have a challenge. So it's a problem for all of us to look at. And so what do the research show that are risk factors that are particularly unique, if you will, for pastors? So number one, a history of sexual abuse often is predictive men and women having challenges in this area. Okay? And when we look at the history of sexual abuse, including viewing pornography as children, would you agree that if I look at pornography or exposed to pornography as a child, it's gonna set the stage for me to have those images there and to be tending to look at them? You know, we did recently a survey of the students here on this campus, and when you include particularly male exposure to pornography, the statistics are about 40% of the men have been sexually abused, if you include that as an indicator of sexual abuse. About 40% of the men on the campus. Okay? So it's about 27, 28% of the women on campus. An immature understanding of sexuality is important too. We don't do a good job of teaching our children about sex and godly, holy sexuality on this campus. We just don't do a good job. In the church, period. As parents, we don't do a good job. You know, we don't like to talk about it because it's one of those dirty things. We don't see it as a holy thing, you know, as a godly thing. And so that's important. A family history where rules are stressed more than relationships. You know, you have to do it right, you know. And again, we're susceptible to that here in our church with our very, very high standards. And so that leads to loneliness. It leads to depression. You know, when your connections are not really relational, but they're more performance-based. And so that's a predisposing factor. The research shows really clearly. When a person's acceptance, and this is particularly true of pastors, has been achieved through spiritual achievement, okay? Your acceptance is connected to how well you do spiritually. That's a setup. How many of us, and I know this has been true in my own life, a part of our acceptance has been because we've excelled, you know, even as children in the church spiritually. We've been the ones to shine out spiritually. We've gotten a lot of accolades for that. Well, it's a setup. You know, it's a setup. So look at that. And again, if you have a history of sexual abuse before you come into the seminary, is that problem just going to magically disappear because you've come here now? And when you're learning all these wonderful theological concepts, does that deal with the problem? It doesn't in and of itself. And so there are a lot of folks who come into the seminary with that history, but it's never been dealt with. And their hope is that somehow, maybe if I immerse myself in this pursuit of godliness in the seminary, the problem will just disappear. And it doesn't by itself. It doesn't by itself. So, okay. So, look at some of the other things. Many of us who choose pastoral ministry, and I want you to think about, why are you here? Why are you here? Now, the answer normally is, well, because I believe I have a call from God to pastoral ministry. And honestly, you know, probably for the majority of people here, that's true. We have a call to pastoral ministry. But I'd like to suggest to you that call is most often intermingled with other factors. You know, and it's not that it's not a true call, but our motivations for being driven or attracted to pastoral ministry are not simply, well, God told me, and so that's why I'm here. You know, there are a lot of other payoffs that we get from pastoral ministry. For example, people who are insecure in and of themselves, they have, you know, they maybe have been shamed or don't have the question of their lovability and value and preciousness hasn't been settled in their minds. Well, if I'm a pastor, that's going to make me somebody. You know, people are going to then think I'm wonderful. You know, it's a way of meeting one of my own needs rather than meeting the needs of other people. So a lot of us come with those insecurities. I know I did. I came. And God is great about cleaning some of that up, but we have to acknowledge what is before we can move on to what it needs to be, right? Some fall into pastoral codependency, that is, needing to sacrifice themselves for the sake of others. You know, my call is to be a helper, and so I'm going to help. But there are too many people, if it's pastoral codependency, I'm helping with what agenda? To get my needs met, rather than to really invest myself in the lives of other people. And so that's a lack of pure motivation. You know, pastors too have accessibility, anonymity, affordability. Online pornography is easy to get. I mean, it's there. It doesn't, you know, sometimes it comes up when you're not even looking for it, right? I mean, it's just, whoop, it's there. And so often with pastors, our schedules don't lend themselves well to accountability. You know, we're kind of in our office. You know, we may feel lonely, disconnected. You know, things, you know, your wife's mad at you, whatever. And so you start thinking. The images start coming, and it's just so easy to click, and boom, there it is. And especially, you know, we've been doing some research on pastoral family stress. Do you know that over 70% of pastors who are now pastoring in the North American division struggle with their personal relationship with God? When that's not strong, it opens the door. We're susceptible for so many other things. And again, over 70% struggle with prayer life and just personal connection of our own pastor. This is a survey we're just finishing, by the way. So this is new and fresh. Vocational consequences. High expectations of pastors to lead exemplary lives. Now, where do those expectations come from? Do they come from your church? Do they come from you? Do they come from the conference? I mean, all of those things lead to that pressure to be perfect, to be exemplary. Who can live up to that? Nobody. Okay? And so the first thing I want to suggest is please allow yourselves to be human. Okay? Please allow yourselves to be human and resist the tendency that your congregations may have to put you somewhere other than human. Okay? In other words, I recommend that you, in your sermons, tell your story. You know, I mean, talk about you. Talk about your journey, your struggles, and how God is giving you victory. That makes you human. It gives your congregation permission to be human too, as well as to allow you to be human. So there's a good thing about that. You can be going from sunup to sundown working for God, right? I mean, those of you who've pastored before coming here know that that's true. I mean, there is no end to the number of calls and hospital visits and crisis in this family and marriage problem in that family. And I mean, you can be going all the time and not take any time for you. When you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and we do have pastors who are angry, hungry, lonely, and tired, you're set up for an addiction. You're just set up for an addiction. So that job stress is something that we need to learn how to manage well. Fears of losing your job. You know, oh, I'm struggling with this problem or that problem. Who can I talk to? You know, can you call your conference office? A lot of us are afraid to. But I want to tell you that we're working really, really hard to change that. You know, we're talking to ministerial directors and trying to create safe places in our conferences. I'm on a committee with the North American division called Sacred Family Circle, and Ivan Williams, the NAD ministerial director, is working real hard to change the culture, to make it safe for pastors to come and share what's really going on with them, and not have to be afraid that you're going to lose your job. We're also, one of my dreams and goals for the future is to have a center where Adventist pastoral families can come when they're in trouble and talk about whatever they need to talk about and get healing from godly Christ-centered professionals, you know, who can really come alongside them and support them in this. You know, there needs to be a place. There isn't such a place right now that we have. You know, we farm it out sometimes, we go to other places, but I'd like there to be one of our places. So fear of losing our job leads to silence, and silence just leads to a continuation of the problem. Pastoral isolation, you know, especially when you're out in a district, in the boonies somewhere, who do you talk to? You know, who do you talk to? There aren't other Adventist pastors around. You know, I recommend that you talk to somebody anyway. You know, here you meet people, right? You form connections and relationships in the seminary. Well, keep those phone numbers. Even if you're at a distance, talk to people. Form an accountability group. Friends that you can really be open with, be vulnerable with, and know that you're going to be accepted, because it's okay. They're struggling, you're supporting each other in the journey. Okay? That's okay. But you know what? A lot of us think, well, I don't want to talk to any non-Adventist pastors. You know, they're not Adventists. You know, forget that. You know, talk to them. They're probably going through the same struggles that you are. Talk to them. Doesn't matter. They're men and women of God. Talk to them. Okay? Let's not be so exclusive. Okay? And many people, because you're so busy, you know, who are you friends with? Okay? Who do you really hang out with and do stuff with when you're out in your church district? Do you hang out with your church members and their families? You know, maybe you can, but a lot of us don't feel that we can. Okay, so who do you hang out with? You know, we don't have a lot of folks sometimes, and so we're lonely. And loneliness, again, is a challenge. Now, do you know what this word means, pastoral narcissism? Do you know what the word narcissism means? You know, kind of a self-focus, self-centeredness, you know, kind of wrapped up in ourselves. Well, sometimes, you know, this is what I'm talking to you now is about research. You know, I got this from, you know, from really, really good articles. One of the challenges that we have as pastors is grandiosity. You know, again, we need to make ourselves big, you know, grandiose. We think of ourselves as much larger and bigger and better than we are, and we're invested in making it so. We need to be careful about that. You know, if there's anything that we need to embrace, it's the idea of servanthood, you know, and humility and servant leadership. So it's not about us. You know, our ministry is not about us. You know, it's about them. And it's about God. We're a servant. And so we get into a lot of self-serving behavior. You know, a lot of pastors, you know, my goodness, have tremendous charisma. You get them up here, man, and they like, they're a different person, you know. They have that charisma about them. And so you get an adrenaline high from preaching, many people do. Have you ever had that happen? You just preach your heart out, and you just leave, and you have this wonderful feeling, just lasts all day long. You know, it's a high. And again, what does pornography give you? Gives you a high as well, right? And so looking for those connections, okay, is really important in our lives. Again, we talked about the need for praise and affirmation, the need to simply be listened to sometimes because no one's ever really heard us or listened to us as a child. A lot of these things are things we bring into our lives, you know, from before. Spiritual immaturity, you know, especially in churches with very high standards, a lot of times we get into this black and white thinking, all or none. It's either this, you know, and I'm all out for God and this or that, or I'm on the other extreme. You know, we have very little capacity to be balanced sometimes. And people who engage in black or white thinking have more tendency toward any kind of an addictive process. By the way, think about this. I believe that all of us are addicts to something. To something. It may not be pornography. And if it's not, that's cool. I'm so glad. But the things I'm telling you are characteristic of all addicts. So just think about these in light of your own experience, okay? The tendency to blame other people when things go wrong. You know, a lot of us who feel so righteous, self-righteous, and you know, we get very easily defensive when someone points out things to us. And so, you know, well, it's not my fault. It's got to be someone else's fault, rather than being humble and taking responsibility. Oh, the illusion that we won't get caught, you know, I can just, you know, minimize the screen real quick, and, you know, when the secretary walks in, I'm not going to get caught. You know, that illusion that we won't get caught. Thank God that God doesn't let us go on and not get caught. You know, he doesn't let us get away with that because he loves us too much. He loves us too much. And the belief that the good that we do, all of the visitations that we do and the preaching, that it somehow cancels out the bad stuff that we do. You know, if I do this, you know, we have that belief, honestly, a lot of us do, that, you know, God'll, you know, he'll wink at this because I'm really doing all this good stuff for him. Okay? Accountability or lack of accountability, you know, a lot of us, you know, we honestly search your heart. You know, how do you do with authority and submission to authority? Do you really like it? Or is there a bit of rebel in you, like there has been in me? You know, we struggle to submit to authority. You know, we don't like it. We don't like people telling us what to do. And so that tendency leads us to more isolation and to lack of accountability. And again, a lot of us don't have accountability groups that we're a part of, and we need to be. Anger. Too many pastors I know and that I've counseled with over the years are angry at women. You know, you may need them, you may be married to them, but there's a part of you who's still angry at them. And we express that not in direct ways. We would never go to them and say, "I'm really angry at you," but we do it through sexual seduction. You know, I mean, just think about that. You know, what message are you giving a woman when you are not married to her and you make attempts to be sexual with her outside of marriage? I mean, what message are you giving her about her as a person, as an individual, as a child of God? You know, is it an uplifting, positive message, or is it a message that's demeaning her? Well, there's anger mixed up in all of that stuff. There's somehow you've gotten messages about women that have not been good messages. And so think about that. And sometimes we're angry at God, honestly, because we're overworked, we're overstressed. I mean, all this stuff is going on, and it seems like God's not here for us. We're just working for him, and we're not getting much back. And we're angry at God. And we feel, well, if I'm angry at you, God, and you're not really coming through for me, then I deserve this. You see the stinking thinking there? The setup there? Okay. And so a sense of entitlement. I deserve to have to get to do all of these things. Okay, relationship struggles. Pastoral ministry places tremendous strain on marriages. Our survey is showing that. Performance-oriented pastors often blame their wives for the problem they have. It can't be me. Research shows that there's a presence of other addictions too, along with pornography. 19% of those who are engaged in pornography also have alcohol problems. This is pastors now. 38% food. In our survey, food was a big issue for pastors and their spouses. A big issue. 88% are addicted to work. Okay, rationalizations from pastors, a need for reward, talked about that, justification for hard work, a wife who doesn't care, long hours in ministry. Oh, no one gets hurt, right? It's just me alone and my computer. No one else is getting hurt by this. No one gets an STD, no one becomes pregnant. Okay, but is that true or not, that no one gets hurt? People do get hurt by what you do. It's only curiosity. It won't turn into a problem. And it will enhance my outreach to others because I kind of know what they're struggling with. Okay. And so how do I know if pornography is a problem? Okay. In other words, if it really has become addictive. Unmanageability and loss of control. You know, you know it's wrong because the Holy Spirit's working on your heart, but you rationalize, it's not that bad. I can manage it, I can control it, and I'm going to do it anyway even though I know it's wrong. Unsuccessful attempts to stop, rationalizations. Fantasy is a great big thing. You know, with pornography, it's like looking and undressing women in your mind and doing all this kind of stuff. I mean, fantasy is a very big part of it. Neurochemical tolerance, which means, you know, I used to kind of get this high, you know, with this much, but now it takes this much to reach the same level. And using sex to change your mood, either to elevate it or to help you relax, you know, after a stressful day. You know, if I do this, it's going to help me relax. It's going to help me sleep, unwind, those kinds of things. Those are symptoms of unmanageability. Stress triggers sexual behavior. Okay, when you're stressed and under stress and you don't have good, healthy outlets, it becomes a trigger. And there are a lot of different triggers. You know, what triggers you for any of your addictive behavior? And then what happens is rituals become established. You know, you get into certain habits of doing certain things certain ways, and you know that if I go onto the computer late at night, okay, that's a part of my ritual. Well, I'm just going to prepare for my sermon. You know, it's a part of the stinking thinking. But I know that if I do this, it's going to be a trigger for me because there's no protection there, and I'm going to do it because that's what my process has been. Okay, so we develop these rituals or these things that we do that we need to identify if we're ever going to overcome it. Then the acting out, of course, occurs. And this is important. Relapse occurs long before you click the button, because relapse occurs in your head, in your mind, long before you actually do the thing. Okay? And so you're already way down the process before you click the button, way on down the process. Okay, and so here's what we recommend in terms of treatment, and I want to spend some time on this. To deal with neurochemical intolerance, in other words, the pathways that have been made in your brain that are almost like, boom, the trigger goes and the pathway's there and you're done before you even know you're done. We recommend a period of sexual abstinence, okay? And I'm talking about if you're married. 30 to 90 days is recommended, and your spouse must be in agreement. Again, this is a biblical principle. What it does is it resets your biology. It resets your brain, and it gives you the belief and the knowledge, I can be successful. I can do without this, okay? This is not my most important need. Okay, get tested for sexually transmitted diseases. It's important, especially if sex has been, you see, often along with pornography are other kinds of sex that happen. Again, that's not the focus of today's talk, but, you know, prostitution, you know, affairs, and again, pastors are not immune from any of this. I've heard these things from pastors, all of what I'm saying to you, okay? So develop a strong self-care plan. If you remember last fall, I talked about pastoral self-care. I think it was, or last year, not too long ago. Get tested for ADHD. Research has shown that there's a connection between pornography and ADHD very often, not all the time, but very often. So it might be good to get tested for that and get treated for that. It could help. Engage in a 12-step program of recovery. Is that okay for pastors to do, by the way? A 12-step program of recovery? Okay, yeah. So here's some things right around here. Journey to Wholeness men's group and women's group. Right now, there's a group every week on Thursday evening at 7 at the Village Church. Okay? For men and for women. Okay? I want to introduce to you my friend Ray Nelson, and maybe with the microphone. Ray, talk just a little bit about about that and what's going on at Village and wherever else you'd like it to be.
Is this on?
There we go.
All right. Okay, the journey to wholeness started several years ago and just recently has become available. The resource materials are available, and this past September, the Village Church started a group for women. We just started a group for men. We did have a group that was meeting on Thursday evenings here at the seminary, but some feel more comfortable in a site other than here. Another possibility is to have a Friday morning meeting. Thursday evening meetings might not be the best time. In a men's meeting, and this is for men only, on Thursday evenings, 7 o'clock, and I do have some little business cards with the time and the place, 7 o'clock, and the importance is that the meeting is anonymous and confidential. What's shared in the meeting stays in the meeting. If someone is not keeping to that principle and rule, they're asked to no longer attend the meetings because this is of utmost importance. You're all welcome. We'd like to know if you have an interest. In fact, I brought a couple of sign-up sheets. If you know of someone that might be interested, you may be the person that's the one that's interested, but you may want to refer and invite someone else to attend the meeting. It's not just about sexual addiction or pornography. And by the way, and many of you have probably heard this as well, pornography is the crack cocaine of sex addiction. It's as difficult to deal with for many, many people as it is to deal with a cocaine addiction. So the primary thing to think about, and the Journey to Wholeness is based on the 12 steps, the same 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which began in 1935, and now there are more than 400 specialized groups, one of these being Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. There's Sex Addicts Anonymous. There are three meetings that are conducted every week, Sunday and Tuesdays in South Bend. There's a Sexaholics meeting in Valparaiso. These are special meetings for those who are dealing specifically with lust, and that's at the root of sexual addiction. So I don't know, there may be some that might have some questions after we mm-hmm. finish the presentation, mm-hmm. but that's just briefly.
Yeah.
Does that basically cover?
Yep, thanks.
Okay, and feel free, maybe I can, I've got a couple of pens, and you can just jot down your contact information, and a couple of cards, and we can distribute these and just, I've got pens to go with those as well, Hiva, Dr. Williams.
Great, thank you, Ray. And again, there are women even here who have struggled with that, with pornography, or you can sign up afterwards or any other time, you know, that's comfortable for you. Or you can certainly come and see me too, and I can connect you with Ray. So, but one of the things that we recommend is that even if you go to Journey to Wholeness men's group or women's group, that you also, if you're struggling with this problem, find another 12-step group as well that deals specifically with this, that you go to other groups. And you must be aware, I'm hoping that you are, that the Journey to Wholeness is a program of the North American Division and the program is called Adventist Recovery Ministries, and Journey to Wholeness is the 12-step group there as a part of that. So I hope that you'll make that a part of your church ministry.
Just one other item. I checked with Sexaholics Anonymous and asked specifically what would be required to start a meeting. They said you need at least two people to have a meeting that are members, and you need a place to meet. And there is a place here on campus where we could have a meeting that is very isolated, and I'd be glad to assist if any would be interested in specifically starting a meeting right here. It would be an anonymous, out-of-the-way place.
That'd be great. That'd be great. It would be good to have something, not just for us, but for others on campus, too. A lot of the other folks on campus need it as well. Now, also, getting accountability software is important, and computer filters. So here are a couple of programs. Covenant Eyes and Safe Eyes are really, really important programs. What they do, if you establish accountability partner with somebody, they get an accountability each week of sites you've been on or visited and all that kind of stuff. It goes to them, and then they can say, hey, what's up? Okay. Or there are computer filters that would keep sites from popping up on your computer. And you give someone else your passwords and all of that so you don't have it and can't change it and all that stuff. So those are two good programs. There are others as well that I can connect you with. Now, see the spiritual problem for what it is, a form of idolatry. In other words, sex has become more, your relationship with sex, and this is the lust that Ray was talking about, your relationship with sex has become more important to you than your relationship with God. Okay? You know, we need to embrace that's true if we're struggling with these kinds of problems. You know, confess and repent, but also ask yourself why. You know, what is going on in my life that it has become so important? Do I need to get help for that? Getting trauma treatment if necessary. If there's been a history of trauma in your life, and by that I don't mean, you've been in a hurricane or some other traumatic event, but trauma is any kind of abuse in your life. You know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, those are all kinds of trauma that require help that set the stage for addictions of all kinds. Get help for those things if you need it, okay? Go to counseling. You know, in my survey of pastors, 50% have gone to counseling. That's pretty good, okay? And so don't be afraid to get help. A lot of us do. Address relational problems. If you're engaging in pornography and you're married, how would your wife feel when she finds out about it, which she's going to sooner or later? How would she feel? Huh? Good? She'd feel horrible. She would feel betrayed. You know, like almost like you've been doing something adulterous, you know, giving to this, that, what she's supposed to have. So there are going to be relational problems. Get help for those, okay, through support groups, through marital counseling. 41% of our pastors go to get couples counseling or marriage counseling or family counseling, which is really, really good. So don't be afraid to do that. And again, obtain spiritual and accountability support through a pastoral group. We've talked about that. Now, the reality today is if you're found out to have the problem, that a lot of times conferences hesitate to stick you right back in there, you know, in pastoral ministry. And so often what's recommended is that you take a time out to get sobriety, to really work on yourself and on your recovery, so that when you go back into ministry, you'll be a safe person. And again, this is with sex addiction, not necessarily with pornography alone, but when there's been a violation, you know, with adultery, or you've been inappropriate with, you know, with some of the folks in your church, this timeout is recommended. Okay, boy, I don't know how these slides end up getting messed up like that, but anyway, you know, preach openly about this in your church. You know, preach about sexuality, about godly sexuality. It's on you to do. Okay, take the lead in that. Build accountability groups into your church structure. Okay? Hold workshops on it, on sexuality in your church. And focus on this issue as a part of singles ministry or youth ministry or couples ministry. It's really important. We have to change it. So here are some helping resources. You're familiar with the Kettering Clergy Care Center. You know that most conferences have a contract with KCCC. It's like a helpline, a hotline, counseling on the phone, different things that you can do with them to help. Barnabas Christian Counseling Network is specifically focused on helping Christians with sex addiction. PureIntimacy.org is another one. StonegateResources.com. Esther Ministry is for wives of sexually addicted ministers. Right here in Buchanan, there's a retreat center called The Lodge, just down the road. That is a residential treatment center for pastors and their families. And it's a good one. It's not an Adventist one, but it's one that's there. That's good. Bethesda Workshops. Bethesda, I don't know if you can see that, but it's just www.bethesdaworkshops.com. This is a program that starts Wednesday and goes usually through Sunday morning. It's kind of an intensive time, just of a few days, that many people find helpful. It's reasonably priced, and you can drive to it. Faithful and True Ministries, faithfulandtrueministries.com. Mark Laser was a former pastor, psychologist now. His whole ministry and the ministry of his wife is around helping with pastoral family addiction. I just talked to the counseling center here on group, here on campus, and they're willing to start a group, like a therapy group, if there's enough people who have an interest in it and who want to do it. So if there's enough people who have the need, they're willing to do the group. Once a week, it would be a therapy group. And this would be for people who have trauma issues or whatever. Healing Wounds of Sex Addiction by Mark Laser, Breaking the Silence, Pastor Bernie Anderson. You probably know him. He's an Adventist pastor, you know, who's written a book about this. Every Man's Battle, Steve Arterburn. False Intimacy is specifically for pastors who struggle with this. It's a great book. Patrick Carnes, the classic a person on the management of sex addiction from a clinical point of view as a treatment center. So these are resources that are important. So that's the end. Questions, comments, feedback? We have about 5 minutes left. Can I share the slides with you? Absolutely. Ada, I see you. I'm going to send them to you.
You mentioned that a common problem is men being angry with women. Mm-hmm. Can you just elaborate on that a little more? What some of the major causes of anger that's directed toward women?
Yeah. There are several. One is if you didn't have a good relationship with your mother, and you perceive that she didn't really meet your needs as a young man, then often there are issues that we have with our moms that get played out in anger. If you were abused by a woman, that's another one. But another common one I see is a lot of us guys are taught not to respect women. I mean, we're taught that women, are to be submissive and subservient to us, and if they're not, then we develop issues because we have those belief systems about women. And so we generalize it to all women, and of course when we marry our wife and she doesn't meet our expectations the way we think she should, that generates more anger at women. But a lot of the roots go back to our younger experiences and how we're socialized or what our experiences are. Another question, a couple over here.
As a parent, I guess my biggest question would be, how do you prevent these things from happening to our children now? How do we stop this from being in the next generation that's coming up?
Boy, that's a great question. One of the things that when I teach the course on human sexuality here in the seminary, probably 10% at best of the students who take the class tell me that their parents are the ones that taught them about sexuality. They learned about it from, you know, from magazines. They learned about it on the street from their friends. They learned about it, you know, from pornography, from some, you know, anywhere except parents. So as parents, who do you want to teach your child about sex? You, right? And so if you're not comfortable with it, what are you going to teach? You're not going to do a good job. And so the first step is to embrace my own sexuality. That's number one. I have to understand the holiness of it and the purity of it and how God's just so much a part of it. And, you know, when I understand all that, then I'll be able to, to share. And so I need to be educated, first of all. I need to be educated. And I need to be courageous in teaching my children. I need to teach them about sexual boundaries. You know, what is appropriate? What is not appropriate? I mean, all of those different things help. And so the first thing is, number one, get educated. Number two, if you really want to get educated, start teaching it somewhere. That's why I'm saying teach it in your churches. Your parents in your churches need to be taught it, because don't assume they know it. Research shows they don't. So intentionally make this a part of your church, you know, teachings and programs. Talk about it from the pulpit, because that's going to help, you know. There's so much stigma about it. It's like, oh, but if you talk about it, it begins kind of minimizing that and becomes, oh, this is good, not bad. You know, this is godly, not ungodly. And so being proactive, you know, learning about it, teaching it, and then intentionally teaching your children about it, I think are things that are really, really important. I'm sorry? Oh, start with your kids very young. But it's not just one conversation. You know, well, my parents talked to me about the birds and the bees, or they gave me a book or something. You know, this is a process, because at different ages, there are age-appropriate things that they need to learn. They're not ready at 6 to learn what they need to hear at 16. But they do, but they're going to be exposed to it then by somebody else, if not by you. So start early and teach them in age-appropriate ways. It's a process. It's an ongoing conversation.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the presentation. And I wanted to know if there's any way that we could receive it, like maybe via email or, you know, what have you. Is there any way that we can email you and then you can send that to us? Is that any way possible?
You mean send the presentation to
you? Yes, send the presentation.
Absolutely, we'll send it to you. No, we're going to send it to everybody. You'll get it. If you're on the seminary student mailing list, you'll get it.
Yes, I have a question about individuals who come from outside of a Christian home and lived a long life that was perfectly normal to them and outside of, and people around them who had, you know, maybe they were athletes, secular entertainers, mm-hmm. and, you know, a wild sex life is perfectly normal to them, multiple partners, even multiple partners at one time. And then they come into the church, or pastorate, whatever it is. How do you help that person to adapt? What does research say, or what do you suggest about an issue like that?
Wow, how long do you want us to go? Hi, Beth. It's 20 after already. Okay. There is a lot of undoing that needs to be done in that kind of situation. A lot of creating in us clean hearts, O God, and renewing right spirits. But here's one thing that many people have found to be helpful. The Bible says that whoever we join ourselves to sexually, we become one with that person, right? This is from 1 Corinthians chapter 6. So here's what I recommend that you do. Make a list of everyone you've been with in prayer, prayerfully, Lord, bring to my mind everyone that I've been with, and write them down. This was the person, this was the circumstance, okay? And after you've written your list, Ellen White says that prayers of confession need to be specific, right? So not, Lord, I'm a sexual sinner, forgive me, amen. But Lord, I formed a bond with this person. I take responsibility for that. you know, back in the day, maybe I didn't know it, but I did it. I violated your word. I confess my sin. I confessed I formed a bond with this person. Would you please break this bond that I formed with this person? Amen. Then go on to person two, person three, however long your list is. My experience is that when people do that, God restores their sense of virginity. I mean, it's a very real thing. He restores their sense of virginity. That's just one practical thing. I'd be happy to talk with you or anybody else about that afterwards or about other stuff because I don't have time to go into everything.
Yes, Doc. How did you suggest going about establishing accountability relationships? We hear about it a lot, that accountability is like the way, but, you know, hey, guy, I'm struggling with porn. Are you? Let's talk. How do you go about establishing those relationships?
Yeah. It's like putting yourself in the arena of that. In other words, if you I would suspect that if you attend addiction, you know, Journey to Wholeness meetings, you'll meet other people. If you, you know, sometimes if you just talk with folks, you know, I can always hook you up with somebody. I'm sure Pastor Ray can hook you up with somebody who has given us permission to have people talk to them and contact them. Okay? Writing a paper? Oh, you want me to write one or having someone to write one? Yeah, we can talk about that. That would be good. Thank you. You're welcome.